So Luke's gospel contains the Sermon on the Plain. Now this is in contrast to the Sermon on the Mount in a way, because Matthew puts Jesus on the Mount as a new Moses, while Luke puts Jesus on level, on the plain. So there are two different perspectives. Matthew has to raise Jesus up as the new Moses, whereas Luke goes, no, he's right there in the midst of all of us. And so there's an equality going on here. So here's the second reading from the Gospel of Luke. Therefore, I tell you, Jesus is speaking, therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They have neither storehouse nor barn. Yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your span of life? If then you are not able to do so small a thing as that, why do you worry about all the rest? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will God clothe you, you of little faith? And do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink. And do not keep worrying, for it is the nations of the world that strive for all of these things. So instead, strive for God's kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions, give alms, make purses for yourselves that do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. All right, there's that scripture from the Christian Bible. You heard Sue share the words from Ecclesiastes, a beautiful translation that really hit the mark there. And it ties in with this scripture as well. So you see how the two, from the Hebrew Bible, which, by the way, was the Bible of Jesus, and the Christian Bible, how they all come together. Well, yesterday, Penny and Donna and I, we attended the United Northern Association spring meeting. We were in a little town called Enekama. First time I've ever been to Enekama. I had a P.O. box for the church, not an address, so I turned left when I should have turned right. But I had a nice trip around the lake, and it was really a nice little trip there. How many of you have been to this town called Enekama? Really? Well, not everybody, so I'm not alone here. I'm discovering towns I never knew existed. Do you ever get the feeling that there's something going on that you don't know about? Happens to me all the time, at least. Well, the theme of the meeting, it was blessings. Cheryl Burke, who is the conference minister, she presented for us, and she focused on the Sermon on the Mount. She talked about our culture as being built on, and yes, you're hearing a few things from what happened yesterday. By the way, it tells you when I write my sermons. Our culture is built on us coveting goods how so many of us need more and more and more and more, and that the world is clouded by desire. Get more, possess more, store more. When does it ever end? Well, it doesn't end. That's just it. You just keep accumulating stuff. And then when you have all of your stuff, then you get to buy one of these little storage places, and you can put all your stuff there and pay for that, and then buy another one, and then get a security system. Well, talk about worrying. That just adds to it seems to me, at least. And so what she was saying, we ought to think about choosing emptiness until it loses its terror. An interesting way of putting it. And until we take these mindful steps in that direction, that would be really helpful. Now, I say all of this because I was already going through a few of these things in my head about a Persian mystic, Jalaluddin Rumi, and he wrote these words. I've said before that every craftsman searches for what's not there to practice his craft. A builder looks for the rotten hole where the roof caved in. A water carrier picks the empty pot. A carpenter stops at the house with no door. Workers rush towards some hint of emptiness, which they then start to fill. Their hope, though, is for emptiness. So don't think you must avoid it. It contains what you need. That's the Persian mystic. Emptiness contains what we need. In pastoral care, when someone is experiencing loss, grieving a death of a loved one, as is going on with Laura, as we've talked about, words may be helpful, but often sitting with the person, sitting with the family, silence is necessary, just showing up, just being there. Sometimes when we say things, in fact, they get in the way. Noise, cell phones, radio, cable TV, machines, people talking, they can all be considered pollutants. With all the calamity, with all of the busyness and the worry and the madness in the world, how many of us reach toward emptiness? How many of us reach toward silence? I get to have several conversations during my time with Margie Annis. And Margie, there you are. Okay, we were talking about this. Have you heard the expression the pauses between the notes? You've heard that? Okay. I knew it was somewhere and I found it. It's in this little book, Charlotte Sidney Harris. And I knew I could find it, and I finally found it at about 11 o'clock last night. Arthur Schnabel or Schnabel? Ralph? Okay. He's the one who said it. He was once asked for the secret of his superb piano playing. How do you handle the notes as well as you do? Inquired a student. The notes I handle no better than many pianists, Schnabel replied. But the pauses between the notes, that is where the art resides. The pauses between the notes. He was not being funny. One of the most astonishing things about the arts is what they leave unsaid or unwritten or unplayed or unpainted. What distinguishes a great actor from a merely good one? What is it? Bearing, poise, diction, depth of feeling. Perhaps more important than any of these, it is knowing how to make a pregnant pause in a speech that moves an audience more than anything else spoken. Mark Twain, he understood this when he commented about a performance of Shakespeare. The pause, that impressive silence, that eloquent silence, the geometrically progressive silence, which often achieves a desired effect where no combination of words can help on the lower level of entertainment. This is what is meant when a comedian is praised for his timing, that rarest and finest attribute. The skilled comedian knows by intuition as well as by craft when to pause for heightened effect, and his brief silences are more important sometimes than the jokes themselves. It isn't so much what he says as the way he says it. And this also is where the amateur can be distinguished from the professional. The amateur is always explicit. He finishes every sentence, draws every line, plays every note with the same value. He leaves nothing to the imagination of the audience. Silence is positive. Silence is a compelling force and not a mere negative. Notice at dinner, when silence falls around the table, how the silence becomes an almost palpable thing, and how the longer the silence endures, the harder it becomes to speak. And couples who retreat into mutual silence when they quarrel find it more difficult to make up than couples who shout and argue and have conflict with each other. All art is suggestion and implication. Anybody with practice can play the notes in a Schubert sonata, but to play the pauses between the notes, that's where the true art resides. Sidney Harris. So, can I get personal? Okay, all right. Well, Catherine and I, when we discovered, early on in our, she's not here so I can say these things, and maybe you can delete them from the, thank you. But when we would argue, I'd get frustrated and clam up and get very quiet and then go next door to the office. Next door being because we live in a parsonage and had been there, so off to the office and then make sure she's asleep and come back. Well, that didn't help. Did it? Of course not. There's the conflict. But, well, silence is golden. That's going to help. But not necessarily there. We needed to have time together in silence and maybe then kind of gradually listen and then work it out. Okay, that's just one little personal example that I wanted to share with you. Silence and sometimes just being there and not leaving would be helpful. Now, whatever our interpretation of God may be, we all must agree that God has to be a very good listener. Whatever ultimate reality is out there, how often do we cry out against the universe, trying to find some resolution to the evil that is about us? We ask questions like, why is it that a good and beneficent God cannot be more present when the world is going mad? Where is God in all the chaos and calamity when we experience sorrow, despair, and loss? As ministers and chaplains and religious leaders, when God doesn't speak, I suppose it's up to us to show up in God's silence and therefore to speak for God. This, of course, is very presumptuous, but then we think somebody ought to do it. Silence can be deafening, especially for clergy, and there are many of us who simply cannot stand it unless the void is filled with talk. And yet, what gives ministers the right to speak for God other than a college education and a diploma from a recognized divinity school? What's wrong with silence? The Quakers, they get it. They recognize the significance of silence and speech. And they define each other. They really do. One is inhale and the other is exhale. We learn this in yoga. Inhale. Yeah, exhale, you see. It's all about the breathing. Why can't we learn this in church? Like music and sermon, they perfect each other. The scripture readings, shared by Sue, the one from Ecclesiastes and the one from Luke's Gospel, they remind us to keep speech and silence in balance, remind us that noise can contaminate just as much as silence can exterminate. The Jewish Midrash says, every religion which does not affirm that God is hidden is not true. In that hidden nature of God, there is another assumption, that human beings are, thankfully, limited and finite, and it is because of those limits that we search for God. Without limits, we would have no sense of the infinite. If God were readily accessible to people who could safely make use of that access, then religion would become obsolete. The truth is, God's hidden nature and silence happens to be job security for religious professionals. Silence, for all of us, it's golden, you see. Silence. I just love to hear the babies cry, though. So let's, when we are all around here and we listen to those cries, then we're listening, right? And listening, that's the second thing. This is all about how to get through worry, but maybe in the end you'll say, well, that's ridiculous, John, it didn't help. But listening. So out of the silence, it's about being attentive. Now, in Buddhism especially, there's an urgency in paying attention, being a good listener. Now, why not in Christianity? Well, guess what? At our Board of Trustees meeting last week, Laura Jacobson, she shared a few words, a few thoughts to prepare us for our business conversation. And her topic was what? Effective listening. All right. Now, I wrote these things down. So effective listening. Here we go. One was you don't have to listen at all. Just ignore. Wasn't that one, Laura? And the next was, well, inactive listening, which is, you know, And then the third is, oh, that's good. And you wait for the reply, and you're just like, oh, I want to say something, and then you jump right in. So you're not necessarily listening to the other person. But the last one, number four, is empathetic listening, where you're really there. And along with these listening types, we can repeat back what the other person has said to make it clear that we actually heard what was said, and we can also validate and respect what the other person has said. So often we become defensive or want to inject ourselves into that equation. So often we want to give advice, even though advice is not being requested. Why, we may ask ourselves, did God give us two ears and one mouth? You've heard that before. While I was at the minister's convocation, the speaker focused on conflict and conversation regarding religion and politics. Now, two topics we should avoid at all costs, right? I've heard of the demise of long-term friendships because they canceled each other out in the election. I know marriages where partners voted on opposite ends of the spectrum, and yet the couple truly love each other and would never let Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton tear them apart. Can you imagine that? Through 42 years of marriage, Catherine and I sometimes have fallen on opposite ends of both politics and religion. Did you know that? It makes for a good marriage because we have lots of wonderful discussions. When disagreements happen with us, we listen to each other, creating opportunities to be in conversation and possibly to learn from the other. We have both discovered that sometimes we get so stuck on attempting to convince the other of our position rather than listening to the other person's position. Not only as individuals, but as a country, we should strive to really listen to others, particularly those with whom we do not agree. We must begin to do the work of trying to understand why others believe the way they do instead of trying to convince them that we are right and they are wrong. We must learn to talk about politics and religion, knowing that it is safe. It's all right to agree to disagree. When we take time to listen to other perspectives, we might actually learn something. It is through listening to one another that we will gain a deeper understanding of the real issues at hand. In fact, I know that there are members of our church who intentionally meet with people from the other political party simply to listen to what they believe and why they believe it. And I think that's something all of us could do. Anyway, silence and listening. And finally, the last thing, the religious thing. It moves into dialogue. It moves into communion, into conversation, asking good questions. Why is it that we so often need answers from so-called authorities rather than living the questions? While we are told the Bible has all the answers, the truth is it lifts up all of the questions. Virtually every character in the Bible has failed at something, has made mistakes at something, including Jesus. Christianity is never a safe and easy way to live, nor was it intended to be. The least we can do for each other here at our First Congregational Church is to minister to our relationships with authenticity and with humility and love. Relationships move from silence to listening into respectful conversations. So, I'm going to do a little more Sidney Harris again, because this wise individual from Chicago wrote this back in the 1960s. Best listener, and you're going to probably fight me on this one, but best listener is a good talker. Okay? Well, I may not know it a lot, said a man smugly, but at least I'm a good listener. It often seems to me that the man who prides himself on being a good listener isn't good at much else. I like people who are tuning forks rather than sounding boards. A dog is a very good listener. He fixes those big, brown, sympathetic eyes upon you and lets you pour out your woes to him, sometimes even licking your hand during the recital. But I don't know anyone who has solved his problems by having a one-way seminar with a dog. You might as well talk into a tape recorder, which is the most faithful listener and will play back to you exactly what you said, with all the gratifying intonations of pity and anger and self-justification. An expert bartender is a superlative listener, or seems to be, even when he doesn't comprehend a word you're saying. He knows just when to put in the knowing, ah, and the approving, how true, and the consoling, that's life for you. But a man has to be pretty drunk to believe that he is achieving any real communion across the bar. What we need are more discriminating listeners, and these are hard to find. We need people who know how and when to break in with, that's not so, or you're deluding yourself, or what do you really mean by that remark? These are the people who keep us on the pitch, who force us to try to harmonize our conflicting emotions and are not mere echo chambers for our unresolved fears, our infantile wishes. And contrary to popular belief, it is usually the good talker who makes the best listener. A good talker, by which I do not mean the egomaniacal bore who always talks about himself, is sensitive to expression, to tone and color and inflection in human speech. Because he himself is articulate, he can help others to articulate their half-formulated feelings. His mind fills in the gaps and becomes, in Socrates' words, a kind of midwife for ideas that are struggling to be born. This is why a competent psychiatrist is worth his weight in gold and generally gets it. His listening is keyed for the half-tones and the dissonances that escape the untrained ear, for it is the mark of the truly good listener that he knows what you are saying often better than you do, and his playback is a revelation, not a recording. Okay, so you can argue with that one if you want, but there you go, different take on listening. There is an example for us, and I believe that if you give that some consideration, it's the way Jesus responded in many of the conversations he had with people, whether it was the disciples or the Pharisees, the religious leaders around. Jesus spoke, there was silence, there was listening, questions, conversation, and often conflict. Whether he was giving moral instruction or describing the kingdom by speaking about mustard seeds and yeast and little children, he invited questions and dialogue. And yes, he invited conflict. His use of story and image were central to his strategy. Both left room for his listeners to take part in the making of their meaning, especially the ones he left unfinished. A story like the prodigal son does not have one ending, but two or three, depending on who the listener is. The same is true for the workers in the vineyard and the Good Samaritan. Consider the story about the sower and ask, which type of soil are you, rocky or sandy or fertile? Which is it? How do we respond to the task of trying to manage our lives when the scriptures are open to us? Do not be anxious. Do not worry, we're taught in Luke's sermon. Serve others, we are reminded in the Samaritan parable. Love and forgive, we are challenged by the prodigal son parable. And then how do we as followers of Jesus return to this mad world and do likewise? It is a question I keep asking myself. It may be the reason, in fact, that many of you return to church week after week. In his book, The Silence of Jesus, James Breach recalls going to hear W.H. Auden read some of his poetry at Princeton. It was years ago. The lecture hall was jammed with hundreds of people, all chattering with excitement. When the old man finally came out on stage, he was reading his poetry, but he read in a voice so soft that even the microphone did not help. People immediately began whispering to each other what they thought Auden had said until the poet himself could no longer be heard at all. His would-be interpreters, they drowned him out. What Breach learned that night, he says, if we want to hear what a speaker is saying while others are talking, even though they are trying to be helpful, their voices distract our attention and interfere with our listening. In order for the speaker's own voice to be heard, go-betweens must be silent. And this says to me that there are times for you to let go of the worry and strain and stress and calamity and madness and noise, and therefore to listen for the voice of God in the midst of all of it here in the world, even the madness that might be raging within your own minds and hearts and spirits and souls, that sometimes even this preacher needs to be silent. And so, let's be in silence.